Welcome back to the weekly roundup on Reality Check Radio. I'm Dewa DeBoer, and joining me is William McGimsey. Welcome back to the show, William.
Thanks, Stuart. Good to be here.
And we're recording this a day earlier than usual because it is my birthday tomorrow. So if we miss any important developments, that's just because I was busy celebrating my 30th birthday. And don't forget that you can email into the show still, inbox@realitycheck.radio, or you can text us on 2057. We will get to any important comments or issues you've got for us the following week. And we'll get straight into it. Domestic issues first this week, and then perhaps international ones, although they are quite intertwined, as I think we will find out. So the first issue here locally. We've had a few polls out in the last week. Both the National Party and Luxon are on a bit of a downward trend. Now, of course, there is plenty of time until the next election, but this does seem to factor into an obvious answer here. It's the economy, stupid. There does not seem to be enough activity from the National Party on that issue in particular. And of course, there are plenty of other issues around it. Luxon seems to have responded to this with his announcement that we are going for growth, I quote, and made a few policy changes around that. So perhaps you'd like to tell us a bit about what you think of Luxon's going for growth strategy.
Well, he was supposed to be going for growth from the beginning, so I don't know what he was doing with the last year or so. But the last two quarterly releases from Stats New Zealand on GDP have been negative. So we've got negative GDP growth and negative GDP per capita growth as well. So technically, based on the last data available, New Zealand's in a recession. Now, you can't attribute this all to the National Party. They inherited a very bad situation from Labor, but at a certain point, you're responsible. And when your finance minister, Nicola Willis, not only doesn't reduce the size of the spending bill and the deficit, but increases it slightly, then I think you have to start thinking and looking a bit sideways at it. Another thing to think about here is I just think the contrast with what is happening in the United States with Donald Trump and Elon Musk and Doge is quite remarkable. One of the things that David Seymour campaigned on, for example, was the Ministry of Regulation. So he was going to set up a great big Ministry of Regulation and review all the regulations that are going through and remove the ones that are hampering growth. And I think there has been a small amount of good progress, particularly on farm rules, where they're working through things. They're doing a big project on the RMA as well. But when you look at what's happening in the United States, within days, we've got massive revelations about the fraud, waste, and abuse in the federal government spending. It's being exposed in the same way the Twitter files and various other things are exposed. So Elon's got a sort of modus operandi here, which he's applying to this new situation. And one can only assume that what he's doing is he's setting the table. He's laying out all this fraud, waste, and abuse to get the American public on board when he comes up with a proposal, because he's been given a limited time frame by Trump to propose reforms of the US government. And then he'll bring a proposal to Trump, I assume, laying out all the things that he's exposed which need to be cut. And because the American people will have some knowledge of it because of the revelations, they'll be more likely and willing to go along with it. Now, the New Zealand government's been in there for a year. Why couldn't we have done something similar to this? We just haven't. We haven't. There's a complete lack of ambition in terms of even in terms of basic things that you think, let alone the controversial social issues. There's lack of ambition in basic things like fiscal responsibility. The finance minister can't get the can't reduce the spending, and the Minister of Regulation can't even go and do an audit and let us all know what the wasteful regulation is, even without even proposing some cuts to it. So I just think that the contrast there between the two cases is remarkable.
Yeah, there seems to be a complete lack of a presentation, as it were, of wasteful spending in New Zealand that could be cut immediately. And then when some is identified by the voters, then it's ignored. In the case of, say, the Paris Agreement, that will cost billions of dollars to the New Zealand economy if it's followed. And obviously, if the targets are met, there's a massive cost to our economy if the targets are not met, and theoretically we need to pay out a bunch of money for carbon credits. This is billions of dollars a year drag on our economy. That should be fairly straightforward to fix. And yet we get a commitment from the National Party that they will not step back from that. They will continue to go, with the climate scam full steam ahead. When they're asked to defend themselves, all you get is, well, some of our trading partners like Great Britain and the United European Union. Basically, that's it. It's the UK and the EU. They want us to meet these commitments. There's no other country in the world that cares. Our largest trading partners don't care. Most of them aren't even in the Paris agreements. You don't have China, you don't have India, you don't have Russia, you don't have the United States. And there's basically no care about removing that drag from the economy. You even have things like ute taxes, the taxes on vehicles, emissions taxes on vehicles. They're still there. They're still going up every single year. They campaigned against the ute tax, but it's still there. And all they did was remove the discount for clean cars. These are all very simple things that could be tweaked, that could be dropped, and yet there's no real movement there. And the announcements that we do get from Luxon are, hey, we're going to have a new migrant visa category for investors who want to invest $5 million or more over 3 years in New Zealand, and we're going to remove onerous regulations on those people, like the requirement to speak English. And that, for instance, is his headline announcement when he goes and gets up and speaks about going for growth. It seems completely absurd.
Yeah, it's a buyer visa scheme. So this is a failed policy that Australia tried. And what they found is it allowed a lot of Chinese retirees to come in. So Chinese retirees, they'd saved up a bunch of money, they buy a visa, they come in, it's a nice place to retire. But those people ended up costing Australia more than the amount they paid for the visa because they use the public health system so much when you're in your later years of life. And so Australia actually audited that scheme, reviewed it, and then scrapped it because they thought it wasn't worthwhile. And New Zealand's just implementing exactly the same thing that Australia just decided was a bad idea. So this is really short-term thinking. Let's bring in some rich people to juice the economy in the short term, bring their cash in, juice the economy. But it doesn't do anything to address any of the structural problems preventing growth. We've got housing shortages, we've got infrastructure deficits, we've got a massive productivity challenge. It doesn't These policies don't address any of those things, and in fact, they make them worse. And you touched on the really big one there, the climate change initiative, the climate change policies. It's like the sword of Damocles hanging over the head of all New Zealanders, hanging over the head of the nation's economy. It's going to be very difficult to grow the economy while we have to meet these carbon targets, and especially when a lot of these other countries aren't even trying. If you were a foreign investor looking to invest somewhere, why would you put it into the country that was stupid enough to be trying to do the carbon targets that no one else is? It doesn't make any sense. And then on top of all that, we've got a very high corporate tax rate anyway. So,
Well, for instance, that's a good example of something that would attract investors, is like lower taxes. Well, that's not on the cards. And if you're not willing to go for lower taxes, then why would these investors pick you? If you and there are, of course, many issues in New Zealand. I've spoken with some overseas people, and there are big concerns around the actual ability for people to build stuff and to have the Resource Management Act in New Zealand is incredibly onerous. I know that's being reformed, but
They are going to
like it's
reform that one.
there.
That's one of the genuine policy projects they've got going on that may actually do some good in the longer run.
And but that's not they're looking at 18 months before the election campaign and kicks off, and there's still no RMA reform in front of Parliament. And obviously issues like say iwi making protests to block certain developments. Like people in overseas have read about that, and they know that this could happen to them, and that makes them very, very cautious to invest their money here, when they might lose it. They might have their project shut down at some point because of protests and silly regulations and all kinds of other problems. Whereas the focus should really be at this point on how do we keep New Zealanders in New Zealand, and how do we allow them to be more efficient, and how do we allow them to raise their productivity by getting out of the way a little bit? And that seems to be something that Luxon is not willing to address.
When you vote for a national government, I mean, you expect these days the national government to do a lot of stupid stuff, to buy into a lot of the woke stuff, to buy into a lot of the Labor Party stuff. But you do expect them to be fiscally responsible and financially responsible and good for business even. But this national government isn't even that.
Just thinking of another example with the woke stuff, banking is another good regulation. You've got banks sending letters to companies saying, hey, we're going to pull your bank accounts in the next 10 years because of our climate target, ESG targets, blah, blah, blah. The New Zealand First has put forward a member's bill to basically stop banks from debanking people over those kinds of commitments, but no support from the National Party, so it won't pass, I think. And you There's just so many. There are just so many things that the National Party could fix that they strangely are refusing to do because of their woke commitments. It's like they've lost the ability to be fiscally responsible. They've lost the ability to actually grow the economy because of this commitment to wokeness, which is essentially a degrowth ideology. So how can you be going for growth when you have a degrowth commitments and at an ideological level within your party?
Well, I think Shane Jones said it right on the woke banks things. These banks operate in New Zealand at the privilege of New Zealanders, at the privilege of the New Zealand government. And if they want to come in here and be very selective and ideological about the things they fund, well, I mean, maybe there should be penalties for that. Maybe there should be a few quiet words. Maybe there should be a bit of a discussion about who's really boss here of the New Zealand economy. Is it New Zealanders through their government, or is it these banks?
And another interesting project cancelled this week and was a McDonald's that was supposed to be built in Wakana. And there were all kinds of objections to it, the proposal, and ultimately it was rejected at the local level there, saying no McDonald's, they can't build one here. Is this a case of overregulation to you, or is there a good reason to not allow McDonald's to build more McDonald's's?
Well, it's an interesting case where you've got local democracy, the local community deciding what sorts of businesses they want to set up in their community, stacking up against this sort of the freedom of people to buy and set up businesses they want. And if it were an individual looking to come in and buy a house, a New Zealander, a rightful citizen of the country, then maybe I would be more likely to take the side of the person looking to buy a bit of land and build a house. But when it's a business, these rights like freedom of association, freedom of contract, freedom of purchase, that they're all sort of subject to the democratic will. I don't think if the people of Wanaka don't want to have a McDonald's, I don't see any reason why they should be forced to.
It's an interesting view here because this is something that the ACT Party in particular has selected as one of the examples of overregulation. So it would seem that if Seymour gets his way with regulations, that it will be actually sort of overriding the will of NIMBYs, as they're called, the locals who don't want something in their backyard, their ability to block these
But whose
projects.
economy would McDonald's and Wanaka benefit? It would benefit the people of Wanaka. And if they're making a collective decision that they don't care about the economic benefits, they don't want the bad food or the eyesore or whatever it is they don't like about McDonald's, then that's their decision, as far as I'm concerned.
And since we're speaking about David Seymour, I may as well bring up another bit of news there. While he was doing a fundraiser, he drove a Land Rover up Parliament steps, which caused a big kerfuffle. This was a stunt he was repeating from 1948, I believe, perhaps 1947, when that same Land Rover was driven up Parliament steps. A lot has changed in that time, apparently. Health and safety means that you can no longer drive Land Rovers up Parliament steps. In addition to the McDonald's in Wanaka, he selected this out as well as an example of just silly regulations that are stopping people from doing ordinary things.
Well, I still remember when it was a National Party MP drove a tractor up the steps in protest of the fart tax. And this is all, I think this is all good political theatre. But an interesting sort of thing to look at here is that the Maori Party did a bit of political theatre a few months back of their own when they did a haka in Parliament, and they never hurt anyone. They broke some process rules. It was a bit unruly, in much the same way as driving a Land Rover up the steps would be. But the reaction from various people to these two incidents is quite different, and I just think there's a sort of cause for reflection there on what a sort of tolerance for political theatre is, and what we should condemn and what we shouldn't.
Yes, I think if you were following the mainstream media, one of those would be stunning and brave, and then the other would be the greatest crime of the century. That seems to be how it was treated over there. And there is, I don't really need to repeat it for our audience here, but no balance, of course, when you go to the mainstream media. Whereas you can have more nuanced views here, and I welcome that from you, William.
Good.
And we can switch over to some international issues before we are out of time here. You've already talked about kind of comparing the Ministry of Regulation and DOGE in America. I mean, DOGE has made massive successes in proposing savings in the United States. One of the savings, just purely in monetary terms, basically, the scale is massive of DOGE. Billions of dollars the target is to save. I think was it something on the amount of $700 billion a year in the United States. But they're actually running, I was looking at their budget deficit. Their budget deficit in the States is actually bigger than that. They were running a budget deficit of like nearly $800 billion. Is this going to be enough? Is the United States Senate going to pull their budget in line? Because obviously Trump and Elon Musk have really gone all out with what the, executive orders and showing the voters what has been done, but they still have to bring this through the legislative process in America. And do we see, do we see the same kind of stalling potentially that that New Zealand is seeing when it comes, when push comes to shove and things move along to 6 months, to 12 months, and so on?
Well, you make a good point. It does have to go through the legislature there. But the Republicans are normally reasonably good. It's the same thing I said about the National Party, that they used to be pretty good at the fiscal responsibility stuff. So, I mean, I'm hopeful that they can pass some of this stuff. In the past, they have been, I mean, the USAID revelations are the big thing we're talking about now. And obviously, in the past, the Conservatives have sort of acceded to that and gone along with a lot of it. But I think now that it's been revealed to the public about just how wasteful a lot of this stuff is, I think surely there'll be some appetite for cutting it. The other thing to note here, and it's a sort of technical argument, is that because the economy, generally speaking, grows. You can get by with small deficits because that you're spreading them over a larger economy. So your net debt position as a proportion of the economy can improve even if you're running a small deficit. It's a sort of mathematical argument.
One of the bits of funding from USAID that has been blocked now by Trump was funding to South Africa. South Africa passed a land expropriation without compensation bill that would basically allow the South African government to confiscate farms from white South African farmers and not compensate them at all for those confiscations. In response to just simply freezing the aid as well. The other response has been to invite the farmers, or basically white South Africans in general, to claim asylum in the United States. This has massive ramifications probably for South Africa as well. They've had over 50,000 applications in just the first 2 or 3 days of that. Where do you see this heading?
Well, the biggest and most important thing is the symbolic value. So for a long time, it's been acceptable to point out the plight of and discrimination against various ethnic minorities. And this is sort of the first time the US government has officially put the spotlight on and talked about and offered assistance to a white ethnic group that is being mistreated by the government. And I think that this has a huge symbolic importance, particularly given that the US government is at the same time recognizing that much of the woke policies that have been implemented in previous decades in the US, such as affirmative action and various types of stuff that came out of the civil rights movement, was actually, although it was designed to help the minority groups, in effect, it has been kind of discriminatory against white Americans. So this is an important turning point because it recognizes the US government, which is the biggest and most powerful institution in the world, and sort of a trendsetter internationally for what is right and wrong, what is morally acceptable, what is the zeitgeist. It is now acknowledging that white people, white ethnic groups can be discriminated against, that systemic discrimination and oppression can be targeting them, and that it's now acceptable and something that can be done to seek to address those injustices too.
And while, of course, at an individual level, many South Africans have accepted this and are basically looking to move to the United States, and of course, there has been a massive exodus as well of both of the sort of the Dutch origin and England and British origin South Africans from the country. The groups on the ground there who have been pushing for their own autonomy have opposed this, basically saying, you know, I mean, thank you for freezing aid to the South African government over this. Thank you for standing up and calling it out. But please help us over here. You know, help us to establish our own independent, autonomous homeland for our people. Do you see the potential for a shift, you know, to see that supported? Because you know, in the other foreign policy that the United States has pushed, in particular, Trump is pushing, seems to not have particular concerns over the homelands of, you know, smaller ethnic groups. Particularly, we talked about Gaza last week, but there are doubtless other examples as well.
Well, the US government is supportive of self-determination for the Jewish people in Israel. So it's not, it's aware of that idea and supports it in certain cases. It's just a question of whether they can extend that principle to other groups as well. And this is a step further from
And they are, you're right,
recognizing.
they are somewhat selective about this, as people often are, a little bit too selective about how they support this principle.
Yeah. One thing you get from reading about the history of Afrikaners, the Boers in South Africa, which I've done a little bit of, I'm not some sort of historian or something, but they are a very hardy people, and they sort of have to be to be in that environment, and things have been very tough for them, and many have left, but many are staying, and I think there's a reckoning that needs to be had here. With the post-apartheid South Africa, no doubt there were abuses and bad things that happened to the blacks in South Africa under the apartheid system, but I don't think anyone can really claim that it's been a complete unqualified success in the post-apartheid era either. In many ways, the quality of South African society has deteriorated. There's big crime problems. The quality of the public services and infrastructure aren't as good as they were. You've got this sort of slow motion genocide and killing of the Afrikaner farmers. Many of the most talented people are leaving the country. So, and the desire for self-determination, which has been taken away from some groups, is reasserting itself. Many of the white people in South Africa have to live behind walls and guarded and gated communities and so forth in order to protect themselves. And so, the need for separation and self-governance is sort of naturally reasserting itself because I think at some level, it's kind of necessary and not really a choice.
And the final issue that we have today is around Make America Great Again spreading to Europe. Our final stop on this little international tour. MEGA, Make Europe Great Again, has been pushed by Elon Musk as he sort of looked to spread his message of government efficiency over to Europe. There have been has been another meeting of many of Europe's more conservative right-wing nationalistic leaders. Many of them basically praising Elon Musk and Trump's programs, looking to implement this in the in Europe, more cooperation between conservatives and nationalists in Europe. Do you see, this is something that the Europeans can pick up? I mean, regulations, talk about regulations being bad in New Zealand, but they are notoriously bad in Europe as well. Is there hope to make Europe great again?
Well, things are moving in the right direction in Europe, and we've seen that in recent elections there. People are turning against many of the green mandates, the green policies, be they climate change or water quality related, or, the farm buybacks in the Netherlands and things like that. And people are also turning against the immigration policies that have seen, large numbers of people, perhaps beginning under Angela Merkel, and that's had a really negative effects that are obvious to ordinary people living in those societies. And so there's a natural sort of reaction to try and do something to correct those problems. And as long as the, as I've always said, as long as the problem persists, as long as the cause persists, then the effect will persist too, and there'll naturally be a demand to try and do something about it. And so I think that these movements will continue until the problems that they're seeking to address are alleviated.
And that's a very good message that I can bring home here right at the end, because it's the same for New Zealand. These problems that we see that aren't going away, that the National Party in particular seems to be wanting to ignore, we need to continue to demand solutions, and we need to continue to work on actually solving the problems. And we need to be very, very clear that governments trying to ignore them, that we aren't going away. And that's a very, very important thing for us to remember here at RCR and in all corners of New Zealand society, that we can continue to demand better from the politicians. We can continue to agitate for change, for positive outcomes. And as long as we don't give up, these problems are solvable. Even if it seems to be a little bit hopeless here sometimes, people have gone through worse around the world and throughout history and come out on top. It's never truly over. Well, thank you everyone for listening, and thank you, William, for joining me. That's it for the weekly roundup today, and we will see you all next week.
Thanks.